First case in our calendar is 98-1607, Martin Hillier versus State Farm Insurance. Mr. Bennett.
We followed the fact pattern from your brief, and I'm wondering about as you mentioned, the concept that from Giori that says you must reject at the outset of the policy term. I'm wondering about the corollary to that, which would be that an insurer say to a Martin Hillier, no, you cannot reject that coverage until the end of the term, and we insist that you pay the premium for the entire 2 years until renewal. Does that seem like a corollary, that we should insist on that?
I don't think that it should be insisted that you maintain the coverage. Under the statute, the insured has the right to alter or reject coverages.
And shouldn't have to pay a premium then.
That's correct. The premium would have to be adjusted.
But in this case, then, under your argument, the insured retains that coverage without paying a premium. Wouldn't that be the case that Mr. Hillier said, don't want it anymore? And the insurer needs to comply, you say, with permitting him to reject that. And yet, under our case, the coverage has to stay in force.
Well, he has the right to reject the coverage if he desires and chooses to do that. And the question then becomes, was that done properly? Was it done correctly by State Farm in terms of obtaining a knowing and valid waiver?
But I'm thinking from the standpoint of the insured, who says, boy, I meant it, and I don't want to pay that premium.
Well, the insured is less sophisticated than the two parties. The insured is not going to know if the letter of the law is being required, is being complied with. I think what, in this instance, you have to keep in mind is that the U.S. statute is a consumer protection statute in part, and that's meant to protect people and advise them. In this instance, what I think should have happened was that State Farm then takes the umbrella policy, cancels it because the insurer said, I don't want this coverage anymore, I'm not going to pay for it. Cancel it, reissue the policy, because that contract has materially changed. It's not what it was when it was issued. A whole hunk of that coverage has now been deleted at the insurer's request. But to be clear, so that the consumer, in this case, Mr. Hillier, knows exactly what he has, it should be that policy would have been reissued, given a new form stating that coverage has been deleted.
But under our case, it still wouldn't be I guess, oh, you're saying a new term, so it would be rejected at the beginning of a new policy.
New policy,
I see.
Would be rolled over and it would start a new 2-year policy.
Isn't that really just sort of fiction in this case? I mean, he made a decision to request the company to drop the coverage. His agent talked to him, tried to talk him out of it. He insisted on dropping the coverage. Why would we insist as a matter of law that there has to be a new policy written when there's no issue here of a consumer or an insurer not knowing what he wants to do or not being advised that this coverage is available? Statute requires the company to make it available. There's none of that here. He read a little book and said, I can save some money. That's probably his fault, but I mean, that, you know, he made the wrong decision. But he made the wrong decision. Why should, I mean, some people would think he should have kept the coverage. But there's nothing. It doesn't seem to me the elements for which the statute is written are present in this case. He certainly knew what he was doing. The agent tried to talk him out of it. He insisted, and so he cancels the coverage, or tried to get it canceled.
Sure, I think that Mr. Cleary probably knew what he was doing. I think that he, based on what he had read and the appropriate poor information he got from that book, I think he believed he understood what he really wanted to have done here. But in order for there to be a valid offer of rejection, the offer has to state that, it has to explain what the own coverage is, it has to state that the coverage is optional, it has to identify the costs and the premiums of that coverage. It is being paid for that coverage. And it has to advise the, or allow the company to cover people with their liability. And if we look at the record here, there was no read offer of the umbrella coverage.
What purpose would that have served? The company said, okay, we can delete your uninsured motorist coverage, but we have to issue you a new policy. What purpose, consumer-oriented purpose, would that have served? Would he have had more time to think about it? Is that your point? Or
would
there be a new piece of paper issued? They go through the process of issuing a new policy, new paper. What's served by that? He still doesn't want the coverage. He doesn't get the coverage. He has a new piece of paper put in his file, but what's served by that?
Well, two things. First of all, I think that we can't say what he would have done had it been given the opportunity to get a fully informed consent. This isn't a properly used to say what Marty would have really done in the end. But aside from that, when he signed the rejection on the UM coverage, the alleged rejection on the UM coverage, what was the form? Signs the mail spec. What does he have in his possession 6 months, a year down the road, that says he doesn't have that coverage?
How about the renewal? He's got that. If you follow your argument, the renewal then is a new policy, and of course that happened a couple times here.
Correct. If the policy had been reissued, saying it did not carry UM coverage on the umbrella, then you would have it right in front of him.
It never
is. I don't have this coverage. But never. When this policy just went extended, keep in mind 1990 to 1996, that's one discussion with my agent at some point.
Isn't there another policy involved in this case, a foreign policy where he didn't reject?
That's correct, Your Honor. He added a fourth vehicle policy.
Yeah, I'd like to hear you address that policy.
Well, what happened there was that Mr. Hillier's wife, Eastland, and his son, Mark, bought a new car. They went to the insurance agent and they got a new policy. And that policy was issued with UM United coverage in place. That policy is not an issue.
But it's not.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
Okay. That is not.
That was the subject of a different action back down in the trial court awaiting Great American.
So the only policies are the ones where he rejected the.
Specifically in this case, the umbrella policy.
During the course of the period when you have a policy in effect, every now and then you get sent to you something called an endorsement. that create a new policy?
There's no question as to whether...
Really?
As to whether or not an insurer can alter coverage in the mid-policy period, but I don't believe that...
The insured, we're talking about the insurer. The insurer sends to you and says, we're now going to include windshield protection, towing protection. You know, you get those little endorsement things, every now and then you shove them in your insurance policy. Create a new policy when those come in?
I don't believe so.
Okay. When you get a renewal policy, whenever they renew, they send you anything but a declaration sheet? Okay. Create a new policy?
It depends on if the manner of renewal you're speaking is a policy premium period or goes to the 2-year policy, which I would prefer to have Mr. Rosenberg.
Yeah, I understand that, but let's say it goes to the through the full 2 years at 6-month intervals.
Okay.
Because that's all they'll write them for, 6 months now anyway. Okay. So every time you renew it after 6 months, all you get is a declaration page. I mean, if you want a new policy, if you want to see the policy, you have to call them and ask them, don't you?
That's correct.
Okay. And that happens all the way through the 2-year period.
That's correct.
And maybe for 10 years.
That's correct.
Does that create a new policy when you renew?
Not in the 6-month interval.
Okay. At the end of a 2-year period?
I believe that is a new policy because you're beyond the statute's guarantee period of coverage. The insurer can elect to renew that policy, but our position would be that they would have to reoffer the coverage at that time.
So in other words, every 2 years, I should get not only a declaration sheet, but I should get a copy of the policy, a new policy. Pardon me?
It would be a refreshing change.
I'm just asking. That's what you are saying, so, because if they're selling me a new policy, they have to send me a policy. All right, let's leave that for a moment. Why would, if we follow what's being argued here, that you can reject uninsured coverage in the underlying policy, but you're entitled to it in the umbrella policy, why would we not all just get a $300,000 underlying policy, reject uninsured motorist coverage, but take it in the $1 million umbrella? So, you know, you're understanding. They have an underwriting requirement that it can't be because they want the basic insurance to cover the uninsured motorist if they have to cover it in the umbrella. Okay, because otherwise you'd only be paying one premium for two coverages in effect. Because of $300,000, you wouldn't need uninsured coverage if you have $1 million. Okay. If that's the case and they have that policy, why is that policy... Why is that procedure that they require not a valid contract issue? I'm not going to sell you an extra 100 widgets unless you buy the first 50.
What would they be entitled to do to have that as an underwriting requirement? I don't think the requirement is the problem here. The problem is how they chose to have Mr. Hillier execute the WIC.
Yeah, I understand. But if we say that the umbrella policy has uninsured coverage in it, as a matter of law, then we're saying we are overriding, in fact, their contractual policy understandings, aren't we? And where their requirements. We're permitting coverage, uninsured coverage, in an umbrella policy when it is not in the underlying policy.
That's correct. But that may serve ultimately the purpose of the statute as well.
Thank you, Mr. Vanek. Mr. Rosenberg.
Mr. Rosenberg. Please report. My name is Henry M. Senator of the Appalachian State Farm Insurance Company. This is a particular case. I would just like to state that we have gone full circle now. We have prevented insurance companies from rejecting coverage. Now they are attempting to have us reject, disallow an insured to reject the coverage he doesn't want, yet they want the company to afford it and not get the premium. This whole this whole case scenario stems from Mr. Hillier, who had UM coverage on all of his policies at the time, two automobile policies as well as an umbrella policy. He then reads a book by Gibbons called Wealth Without Risk, and then he goes to his agent, and he tells his agent, I want to drop the coverage on my automobiles. And the agent tries to talk him out of it. He admits that. And then he nevertheless bends to his wishes and rejects the coverage. He hasn't rejected an injured motorist coverage form. When underwriting understands this or sees what's happening, underwriting realizes that they cannot or they do not permit an umbrella policy with uninsured motorist coverage if the underlying vehicles don't have that coverage. It's a rating problem. You pay a lot less, like the widget example. You buy the first 50 widgets, they're going to charge you X dollars, but if you buy another 1,000 after that, the price is going to go down. Because, at least in insurance purposes, the major risks, 99% of the cases will probably fall within the risk of the $100,000 underlying coverage on the vehicle involved. And so then Mr. Ferguson, the agent, calls Mr. Hillier and states that our underwriting policy did not allow us to continue with the umbrella policy. However, as Mr. Vanek stated, he had an option. And the option was given to him, a choice was given to him, where he could keep UM coverage on his umbrella if he reinstated it on his vehicles. If he would not reinstate it on his vehicles, then we have to cancel it on the umbrella policy. And that's what happened. Mr. Hillier took the choice of rejecting UM coverage on the umbrella policy because he did not want to reinstate it on his automobile policy.
But to be fair about it, 393718 doesn't say, but to be fair about it, 393718 doesn't say that an insurer has the right to determine which policies they're going to offer uninsured motorist coverage. It says every policy issued in this state for a car garaged in this state has to offer that coverage.
And they did.
Okay. They offered it with a condition.
Well, they also have a right to set forth their underwriting policies, which I think are filed with the Department of Insurance and Public Health.
I understand that, but the statute doesn't say you can offer it with a condition that we, for instance, will give it to you if you drive a red car.
Well, they
can't do that, can they? But they said, we will give it to you if you carry it in your other policy. Isn't that a condition that the statute doesn't portend?
It's an underwriting condition. If he wants to have coverage with this company, he has to have it on his underlying. I don't think there's any company that would write it on the umbrella alone.
I might agree to that, but the question is, can you have an underwriting policy, as you call it, an underwriting requirement that, in effect, contravenes the statute?
I don't think it contravenes the statute because the underwriting policy says you put it on your cars, we'll write it for you on the umbrella. So they have to write it on the vehicle. There's no question about that. They can't put conditions on that. But when you're trying to get an excess coverage on top of that, I think they do have a right to. There's a reasonable conditions that the company can utilize from an underwriting standpoint, which are filed with the Department of Insurance and which everybody knows about.
Let me concede that for at least purposes of argument. The statute doesn't say that, though, does it?
No.
Okay.
The statute doesn't say it has to be, the offer has to be in writing. Either the statute doesn't say the rejection has to be in writing.
Does the statute say that it has to be offered on every renewal?
No, it doesn't. In fact, it states otherwise that if you reject it, you don't have to offer it again.
So one rejection covers the entire gamut of having a policy with that company.
That's right. And that's not only in the statute, it's also
a
right in this rejection.
Not
form.
All the policies.
And then if you want it again, you have to request it.
That's right. In writing. That's right.
Counsel, so that I do not misunderstand, at the point at which the company realized that
they
had these umbrella coverage portion without the
this answer between
U.S. There's confusion in the record on that. If you read the depositions, I think, of Ferguson, he indicates, I think, that the UM coverage would be canceled.
I'm not sure to say that they
might have elected to cancel the umbrella policy.
If they sent it in, either have to have it on the underline.
I'm not sure that's clear as to whether they said that or not. The thing was that he could have it on his umbrella policy, but he had to reinstate it on his vehicles, with whatever company he wants to reinstate it with, but he has to have the underlying coverage from a reading standpoint. Umbrellas are relatively, nothing's cheap anymore today, but it's relatively cheap because it relies upon the fact that 90% of the losses will probably be covered on the automobile policy. It's only the catastrophic loss that fits into the umbrella. But if you don't have that, then your umbrella policy drops down and becomes the primary policy on the car.
That's the way it's written. It doesn't to say this only picks up at $500,000.
No, it's a drop down coverage. If there's no coverage in the underlying policy, if the umbrella will drop down and become primary. That's why they insist on having at least have that coverage on the car.
If the policy said this only picks up at $500,000,
like a gap coverage, like
then that would not present the same underwriting problem.
Probably not, but I can speak for the fact that both the first one broke. Excess coverage does have a drop down provision. If there is something covered under this policy, which is not covered under a primary policy, then this coverage will drop down in the primary school. And that's the reason for having the coverage of the underlying vehicle. Can I reserve some time to rebut Mr. Rosenberg?
No, Mr. Rosenberg he's taking some of the appellant's time, and so he has rebuttal, but happily he does not have rebuttal.
Well, then I would just like to comment.
Anticipate what he might say.
His comment, I think, direct towards 39, 37, 30, et cetera, the 39. I first of all, talking about the 2-year guarantee policy, I submit, and I couldn't find any case law on it except for the this Supreme Court's ruling in the Du Bois versus Travelers case, that there's a strong indication that the 2-year guarantee renewal policy doesn't apply to an umbrella. It deals with the basic policy on an automobile to make sure that we keep that uninsured motorist off the road and make sure he has coverage all times and have adequate knowledge. So I don't think it applies to an umbrella or an excess policy. I also would like to submit, I don't think any of these arguments were raised before they came to the Supreme Court. The other thing that I believe Mr. Bannon referred to was something about the offer must set forth the nature of the coverage, the charges, and all the rest. He's referring to an administrative code, I think, that only deals with insurers who write insurance in the state of Ohio, but their basic policy doesn't include underinsured motorist coverage, and therefore they have to explain to the prospective insurer that we will have Ohio offer underinsured motorist and all the other definitions.
Mr. Hanneman, given your expertise in this area, I'd really like your thoughts about it. Do you agree with recognizing it wasn't raised before and recognizing all your arguments, but the statute, that 2-year statute, the statute that requires you to insure for 2 years, because you know how many times we see cancellations after 6 months. Do you agree that that's what that statute says, that You have to, State Farm has got to give a policy for at least 2 years. Now, they can raise the rates, obviously.
That's right. And they've got a guarantee. The automobile policy, on the basic primary automobile policy, I do not believe it applies to an excess policy.
I'll accept. I understand that. But even the basic policy?
On the basic policy, I believe the statute requires them to renew the policy for 2 years, subject to the provisions in the statute, which is, I'd like to bring that up with respect to the Ilger case. If they request something, that they want to reject something within the 2 years, they can do so. And in this case, Ilger's requested that. But in addition to that, I think it's what, not payment of premiums, mm-hmm. representation, and some other things.
I'm talking about if I want my policy, I buy it for 6 months from State Farm, and I have 3 accidents in the process, and they want to cancel me. And they send me a cancellation notice, as all the companies do. Do you think under that statute I have a right then to say, wait a minute, you've got to renew me for 3 more renewal periods for a total of 2 years? Up until just recently, we haven't seen that argument, but that's what that statute seems to say, doesn't it?
It seems to say that, and I can't quote it for you, but I don't know whether a loss record can cause a cancellation during that period. But that statute is pretty strong in the sense of saying that you must renew it for 2 years. But then after that 2-year period, I think it's an open contract, so you can do whatever.
Sure, yeah. But you seem to think that that's what the statute says, too, because I haven't seen it argued until the last 6 months.
The statute in front of me.
And I respect that.
I feel like it's a pretty strong statute with respect to the first 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were trying to prevent is having people get canceled and all of a sudden become uninsured motorists out on the highway. They had put notice ahead of time that their policy is going to be canceled, and they could make changes. I think your DuBois decision seems to indicate that there might be a reason for cancellation in between. If you have cause for it pursuant to the statute. I think they could raise the rates, as you mentioned, at high risk, but I don't know whether they could really drop them just because of the record. But I didn't prepare for that. It's an awful tough. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mintzman. Mr. Rosenberg, you have about a little over a minute and a half.
Thank you, Eric. A couple of brief issues. In the exhaustion cases, we do this set off all the time. If you take the umbrella, it's a $1 million umbrella, and set off the first $100,000, even if there's no underlying coverage, you can insure for anywhere from $100,000 up to $1 million. And we do that in the exhaustion context. This court is going to hear the Mawson case, and this court is well familiar with the Bogan requirement where you set off the entire underlying limit. And that's essentially how you solve opposing counsel's problem in a case like this. You no longer have the premium problem. You no longer have increased risk and what have you if you set off whatever the underlying coverage is. The statute does require that the umbrella offer uninsured motorist coverage. If it has to offer it, and there has to be an adequate projection, then by statute, you have to have it. The question then becomes, what do you do if it's not in the underlying coverage? Set off is the perfect way to solve that problem.
Wait a minute, you set off the underlying liability or uninsured coverage that isn't there. What are you setting off? There's no uninsured coverage in the underlying policy.
Whatever the underlying coverage would have been.
Well, how do you make that up? Just as you go along?
Well, no, in this particular case, we know that the underlying coverage was in terms of liability, which was $100,000.
Yeah, but where is there any authority for that? You're saying that if somebody has a $100,000 policy without uninsured motorist, has a $1 million umbrella, and let's assume it has uninsured motorist coverage in it, that if that person is injured and doesn't get the first $100,000 from its underlying policy, from their underlying policy, because there is no uninsured coverage, that you can set that off against $1 million?
Well, that would be, I think, a reasonable argument here because you couldn't have more than $100,000.
Well, can you show me where it says that in the statute or in the contract?
It wouldn't say it in the contract, obviously, but if the statute requires it, for it, what good is it to have a requirement to carry the uninsured motorist coverage in the umbrella? Unless you're going to do something, otherwise it's an empty requirement.
Well, because there is a set off if you get it at the first $100,000.
So your argument is appealing, except it would seem to me that was the fact that
the IRA is an interesting case.
high possibility in this case that is a
cheese.
Underinsured motorist coverage should not be.
I should reverse this.
This is a policy that you would describe as a problem. Would we all be here arguing that a specific language of the contract says it covers everything? It was for
the
As far as the two-year argument goes, and I'll conclude with this, I don't really feel in the sense that the Denison, Ross, and all these other cases that have argued from the get-go, those are all two-year issues.
But was it argued below?
Well, the specific application was argued below, but the two-year argument was raised below. Denison, I believe, was cited below.
For some other purpose? I mean, is it waived or not?
Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.